Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Tuesday, the 9th of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, Bloomberg counts the cost of the G7 increasing defence spending as Germany orders more hardware.
Former Federal Reserve official James Bullard says he expects a trio of rate cuts this year.
Plus, computer says no, technical difficulties hamper Elon Musk's live stream on X, while he's saying how well the service works.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories. Germany is expected to order 7 billion euros worth of ships and armoured vehicles this quarter. The purchases are part of a sweeping overhaul of the country's armed forces. The news comes amidst a global effort to rearm, with NATO officials saying member states' military spending may need to reach up to 4% of GDP. Now, Bloomberg Economics has calculated that that would mean $10 trillion of additional spending for G7 countries. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg says allies are increasing their commitment to spending on defence.
We made a pledge in 2014 when President Obama was President of the United States to ensure that all allies spent 2% of GDP on defence. At that time, in 2014, only three allies spent 2% of GDP on defence. This year, we expect around 20 allies, two-thirds of the allies, to spend 2%. That's a huge difference.
That was the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg speaking to Bloomberg last week. With its latest commitments, Germany will meet NATO's goal of spending 2% of GDP on defence this year for the first time since it was agreed in 2006.
Former Federal Reserve policymaker James Bullard says his base case is three interest rate cuts this year. He cited successful policy and a strong economy, but said more data is needed before multiple cuts.
Some people are saying that the next report will lead to core PC being only 2.6% on a 12-month basis. So you're starting to get close enough. I think you have enough data in hand right now to justify the first rate cut, maybe not a whole string of rate cuts, but you could certainly justify the first rate cut now based on the data that they have.
Former St. Louis Fed President James Bullard there speaking to Bloomberg. His comments are in line with the current head of the Minneapolis Fed, Neel Kashkari, who says he thinks US inflation will continue to fall this year. That's ahead of the latest CPI print due out tomorrow.
More UK firms are being tipped as takeover targets this year, according to a Bloomberg survey of risk arbitrage desks. Ewan Potts reports now on why rock-bottom valuations could be set to spark an M&A boom.
Virgin Money, packaging company DS Smith and house builder Redrow, just some of the 14 UK firms that have received takeover offers so far this year. Bloomberg's informal survey of traders, analysts and risk arbitrage desks have found that British stocks account for 70% of companies mentioned at least twice as possible takeover targets. And with the FTSE 350 currently trading at a 45% discount to the MSCI World Index, it's not hard to explain the interest. Together with the prospect of easier money when the Bank of England starts to cut rates, and you have a juicy backdrop for private equity firms on the prowl. In London, Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Radio.
Ryald Geiger, the billionaire owner of L'Occitane International, and Blackstone are nearing a deal to take the skincare company private. The asset manager may provide debt financing for the buyout. People with knowledge of the matter say an announcement could come as soon as the coming days. Blackstone has been considering a bid for L'Occitane and conducted preliminary due diligence in February. A representative for Blackstone declined to comment, while L'Occitane didn't immediately respond to a request for comment.
Bloomberg has learned that Jefferies and the law firm Akin are representing Thames Waters investors in any restructuring talks. Lenders and bondholders have started to coordinate after the utility giant's owner, Kemble Water Finance, defaulted on a loan last week. James Wilcock has more.
Last year, Thames made a £30 million loss on £2.2 billion of income after paying £700 million financing costs. Yet it's now proposing to double annual capex to £3.7 billion. Oh, and it's in debt to the tune of £15.6 billion. This explains why no one wants to put money into Britain's largest utility, not its shareholders or the government or bill payers. And now its creditors are lawyering up for a potential restructuring. All parties declined to comment when contacted by Bloomberg, but that's not stopping the storm of negative headlines in the UK press. In London, James Wilcock, Bloomberg Radio.
Tesla's battered share price jumped by more than 5% on Monday after Elon Musk promised that the electric automaker would unveil a robo-taxi in the coming months. The stock closed last week as the worst S&P performer of 2024, but Musk batted away suggestions of market trouble in a discussion with the head of Norges Bank Investment Management, one of Tesla's biggest shareholders. Musk took part in a live-streamed chat with CEO Nikolai Tangen on his social media platform X, but it didn't exactly go to plan.
So we are super pleased that we have you on, and indeed on your X platform. How cool.
Yeah. It's pretty cool, yeah. I mean, you have like lots of people from all around the world simultaneously do effectively a real-time podcast, and it works pretty well. So biological computer, all the human brains that are thinking, and that's a pretty static. That's not.
Can you hear me now? Elon, are you still there? Elon?
This is the second high-profile live stream on Musk's platform to have tech issues after Ron DeSantis' campaign launch flopped on the site.
And those are your top stories. On the markets this morning, US stocks 50 futures are sinking down by 0.3%. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index currently is up by 0.8%. And 10-year US Treasury yields this morning trading at 4.41%, so down 1.5 basis points.
Those are your top stories and the markets. In a moment, we'll get more on our story on European defence spending and how much an increase to 4% of GDP could cost the G7 nations. But just to bring you some breaking news from the Middle East, where Turkey has announced restrictions on exports to Israel. It's going to apply to 54 products as of today, and that includes things like construction materials. So that is the latest announcement that we are hearing from Turkey. This is after they had vowed yesterday to take measures against Israel over Gaza aid drops.
Now, let's turn our attention then to our investigation at Bloomberg. Russia's invasion of Ukraine, war in the Middle East, and concerns about China's rise are spurring G7 countries to invest more in their militaries. Bloomberg has calculated that if they raise defence spending to 4% of GDP, as some are suggesting, that would add up to more than a $10 trillion of additional drain on public finances, basically, over the next decade. It is a huge number. It underscores the difficult trade-offs that countries are likely to face between national security, other spending priorities, and debt sustainability. Joining us now is Bloomberg's global economist, Bhargavi Sakhtarvil, who's been key in doing some of this research. Good morning, Bhargavi. Thank you for being with us. I mean, firstly, I suppose, what's driving the increase in defence spending around the world? It's been very pivotal.
Thanks, Caroline. Well, world defence spending reached a record $2.2 trillion last year. And lately in Europe, Russia's aggression in Ukraine has been a wake-up call. And after years of limited defence spending following the Cold War, more European nations are stepping up and they're spending more. Around 20 of NATO's 32 allies are expected to spend 2% of GDP on defence this year. And that's up from like 4 the year before Russia's invasion. On the other side, we've also got China's rising military might, which is gaining attention amid a looming threat of Beijing potentially moving on Taiwan. So all of this is indeed driving the increase in defence spending.
So what scenarios could play out from here, and how will that impact debt around the world?
So Stephen, we at Bloomberg Economics, we examined two specific scenarios for defence spending, one in which the US and its partners spend at least 2% of their GDP on defence. And we looked at a much more extreme scenario where they raise defence spending to 4%, which is the Cold War levels. For countries like Germany and Canada, with relatively low levels of forecasted debt and fiscal headroom, this higher spending may be painful, but it's feasible. But for other governments, especially Japan, Italy, and France, they would struggle to increase defense spending substantially without taking additional spending cuts, borrowing more, or raising taxes, or some combination of all of these. More specifically, France, Italy, and Spain would be particularly exposed if the extra spending is funded by borrowing. So we expect the U.S., which is already spending 3.3% on defense, they could see debt increase to 131% over the next decade from 99% this year.
Okay, but what about actually just reaching the 2% goal? Because that's the main target, isn't it, for NATO countries, is to reach defense spending of at least 2% of GDP.
Absolutely. So for some people, some officials have been pointing to the Cold War levels, right, where NATO allies spend about 3-4% on defense. Europe in particular, they need to catch up as its industry shrunk after years of low spending on defense. In particular, there have been new styles of war that have been seen in Ukraine, especially in air defense and ammunition, and allies will have to invest more on this in light of this. Also, there have been plans for NATO to put as many as 300,000 troops on higher readiness, and all of this is going to cost a lot more money. The 2% scenario, it might not be sufficient to meet these challenges, and in the 4% scenario, we calculated that this might actually lead to more than $10 trillion of additional commitment over the next decade.
What are the financing options for governments if they want to try and increase this spending?
Well, policymakers, they face difficult trade-offs between choosing whether they want to fund defense and other priorities like social programs. Because on the one hand, governments have to do a major overhaul of the defense sector while also maintaining aid to Kyiv. But on the other hand, they have other priorities like social programs and economic growth. So spending cuts and higher taxes may not be acceptable at this time, especially when these countries are facing additional social spending demands, which are driven by aging populations, pressure to spend more to address climate change, and also people are interested in reducing the tax burden. But this just leaves them with more borrowing, and during this prolonged era of higher interest rates, that's also very difficult, because higher debt is going to push up borrowing costs, suppress economic growth, and further squeeze government budgets. Essentially, this leaves government in a difficult position on what they need to prioritize and which is more important for their countries.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be faced with some difficult choices. Thank you so much for being with us. Bloomberg's global economist Bhargavi Sakhtarvil then on her research and this whole issue around defence spending. You can read more on this story. G7 faces a $10 trillion reckoning as the world races to rearm. It's on the Bloomberg terminal.
The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Well, the former St. Louis Fed president, James Bullard, has told Bloomberg his base case is still 3 interest rate cuts this year. But conviction in markets for 3 quarter point rate cuts is quickly dissipating. 10-year Treasury yields are a whisker from the 4.5% level. And the first fully priced in rate cut is being pushed from June to September. Joining us now to discuss is our executive editor for Asia Markets, Paul Dobson. Paul, great to have you on. Treasury yields reaching their highest level of the year in trading on Monday. What's driving it?
Yeah, hi, good morning. And I think the driver is still the follow through from the payrolls data that we had at the back end of last week that was overwhelmingly positive for the economy, but also pointed to the idea that the Federal Reserve is going to need to keep those interest rates higher for longer. So driving a little bit of setting and pushing those yields higher. I think probably another question might be, why didn't yields go higher still? And I think think that, what's kind of also interesting here is that we're starting to see more buyer accumulation wanting to come in and pick up those bonds when the yields get to these kinds of levels to lock in those higher interest rates. So we're at a little bit of a sort of equilibrium perhaps in the market at these levels where there's more demand, but also that continuing push. The more positive economic data we get and the more inflationary the outlook, plus we were just hearing about the outlook for government spending as well. That's one more factor to consider. All of those are pushing those yields up as well.
What is the expectation then for Wednesday's CPI data? We've seen some more inflationary pressures in the US. How significant will they be?
I think that those are really good questions. It's probably too early to say. The market is just now waiting for the CPI figure, which isn't until tomorrow US time. But the market is really just waiting for that CPI figure now. I'm very nervous about it as well. And I think that it's not just because of the impact that it will have on Treasury yields, but the implications that it could have for currency markets as well, which are at some very important sort of levels, particularly the Japanese yen trading against the dollar just below that 152 level. If it weakens further and goes through that, then it could create more market turbulence. There's some big options expiries in the likes of the Australian dollar as well, all pinned around that event. Now, the data is supposed to show a slowdown in inflation, but the question is, you know, given all of the positive economic data that we've seen, particularly in terms of industrial production, manufacturing, those kinds of things, will we actually, you know, see that slowdown? And even if we do, is that going to be enough to persuade the market that we're on that glide path to lower inflation the Federal Reserve wants us to believe in so that it can begin to cut interest rates? So when you hear the likes of Bullard talking about three cuts this year is still the sort of benchmark, the point that you want to measure off. At the moment, the market is pricing in less cuts than that. And I think that's right. The market is expecting that the Federal Reserve might have to shift its view if we continue to get these economic surprises.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear how Federal Reserve policymakers, current ones as well, have been slightly shifting their narrative. Is there any indication that they're catching up with the market, joining the market in their views?
It depends who you listen to. I think that some of the core policymakers, the likes of Mary Daly, the likes of Loretta Mester, have been on that same sort of line that the Bullard was talking about. Three cuts is the baseline, which is right. You know, that's what they said in the dot plot. Just that they're still counting in the possibility or the likelihood of three cuts. And I think that Powell has been hewing to that line quite closely as well. And I think that's why, you know, this inflation number could be quite important in changing that. We do hear from others like Neil Kashkari, who are saying maybe we don't need to cut at all this year. So there is that sort of background murmuring going on, if you like, but it hasn't yet kind of come to the foreground in too much of the Fed speak, and that's why this number could be pivotal.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business app and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for the Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.